Welcome back to In the Moment. The Dakota Farm Show is underway at the Dakota Dome in Vermilion. Elwin Taylor is Extension Climatologist for Iowa State University. His presentation at this year's Farm Show is on crop production and climate trends for 2018. Yesterday, he stopped by the SDPB studios in Vermilion for a preview. Thank you, first of all, for being with us, and welcome back to In the Moment.
It's always good to be with you.
And do we look back at this point at 2017 and the year that was, or do we just look ahead to trends for 2018?
Well, it's always good to look back a little bit as we look ahead, because things go together. We've been in a La Nina, a rather weak one, but still a La Nina. And also, we're in a 40-year cycle that has to do with the conditions that allow cold air to make it all the way from Canada to Florida. You know, it's been 20 years since they've had damaging frost down in the orange-growing area. Well, suddenly they're getting hard freeze alerts this week. Well, that only occurs when you're in the right part of this 40-year cycle and have a La Nina going on.
So where are we at in the 40-year cycle? Is that something that we can determine?
Well, since we can kind of keep track of that, we're only in the first couple of years of it. That has the effect of the harsher winters in the Midwest and the conditions when, if there's a La Nina, the harshness can go all the way to the Gulf Coast, sometimes also bring miserably cold conditions to the people in Cuba, and bring freezing conditions to the center, at least the center of Florida, and do damage to the crops that are there. And of course, they usually pay attention to the oranges. And so here they are, just after about 20 years without having any hard freezes in Florida, suddenly here they come again, and people say, where's global warming just when you need it? Well, these cycles still seem to live through this. The human effects on the weather haven't overrun the cycles that have been going on for probably hundreds of years.
Let's digress a little bit and address that, because I think it's something that is on many people's minds. How do we look at the natural cycles that are not overridden, as it were, by global warming versus looking at some of the human impacts on climate?
Well, first of all, we know that nothing will override the cycles that are caused by our orbit around the sun, and summer and winter, that kind of thing will still occur. But the other cycles that have to do with where the high and low pressures set up on our planet that seem to be cyclish, apparently have very little energy to get them started. And a lot of the scientists are thinking these days that as human effects get stronger and stronger, a lot of these cycles that we've looked at that repeat after 20 years or after 40 years may be overridden and go away. One of the ones that they've looked at is suddenly there's a lot of ice melt near the North Pole area. And it hasn't been melted back like this since back in the 1950s. Well, they said, it was in the 50s, we didn't hear about that. Well, you didn't see any pictures of it. The satellites weren't doing that kind of work at that time. We didn't have them. But now we have a lot better records for what's going on. Nevertheless, these cycles still seem to be there. The harshness of the winter in the Midwest, I don't know how many times I told my children, quit complaining about the winter. You should have seen the winters when I was a kid. And don't me. I have data.
Let's talk about, in 2017, we spoke on this program and throughout the state so often about the drought. And can you put the 2017 drought in perspective for us? Is it part of a bigger picture or a bigger trend?
The things that we have going on here, when we have a La Nina event, we have a 70% chance that our corn crop and our soybean crop will have a below trend line yield. It doesn't mean it will necessarily be a drought, but it will be less than the expected or expected average yield we call the trend yield. So 70% chance of being below trend if a La Nina is dominating in the Midwest through the growing season. And here we have a La Nina, and it's weakened, and maybe it will be gone, but in the meantime, it's having the same effect on the corn and soybean areas of southern Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay area that it would have here. And a lot of people that have been looking at the glut we have of grain, of corn, and of soybeans, saying, oh, maybe if they have a drought down there in South America, the world prices will go up for these farm produce, and we'll be a little bit better off here when our season comes, unless we also have a drought. Well, how long will the La Nina continue that gives the 70% chance of drought? Right now, it looks like it may be gone by the time we're in our growing season for 2018.
Let's look ahead at 2018 then, and give me an idea, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. We're talking with Dr. Elwin Taylor, climatologist, and I'm wondering about what those farmers, you know, ask you the most. What are some of the indicators that they really need to know to make decisions and predictions about what kind of growing season they'll have?
Well, of course, the farmers are pretty well committed to two or three things that they produce most often and a few alternatives. But usually we're become corn, soybean, and of course wheat as we get into the western portion of the cropping area of the Midwest. Goes from corn in Illinois and Indiana and goes into wheat when we get to Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas, but also our changing climate has done a whole lot for being able to produce effectively and profitably corn and soybeans now in eastern Nebraska and the eastern third of South and North Dakota, even without irrigation. The changing of the climate that we've been seeing in the last 20 years has greatly favored the expanse into what we call the northwestern quadrant of the Corn Belt. And suddenly corn becomes a profitable crop in North Dakota and even places in Canada where people used to, if they grew corn, just plan on using it to cut it for silage rather than produce it for grain.
Even without irrigation, you said. What's the significance of that?
It requires 20 inches of water available to the crop to produce an average crop in the Midwest of corn or soybean. 25 inches of water have to be available to if you're going to have the possibility of a record high yield. So in a year that it looks like the rain is not going to be sufficient to carry the crop through with good condition through July and August, irrigation becomes an important factor where irrigation can exist. However, this last couple of years, we've been seeing the amount of precipitation during the growing season increase to that irrigation starts to become an option, and the possibility of having a good full corn yield or soybean yield is becoming more likely.
Is the changing climate having a similar impact on soybean and wheat production as it is on corn?
It does, but the corn is the main effect right at this present time. Soybean sort of goes along with it. The soybean is a very interesting agricultural crop. It was not historically in the Midwest. It was historically in the tropics, but plant breeding and also people learning how to take care of plants have been able to make the bean in an adapted crop that behaves much like any other plant that you would be having as an annual rather than as a perennial plant. And so it has become a meaningful crop for the Midwest.
So we're looking at possibly the La Nina event, sort of the impacts of that fading, or what kind of year are we looking at 2018 as far as yields go in the state?
So right now we've had considerable moisture at times and dry at times since the crop finished in 2017. And so the subsoil moisture, that is from the surface all the way down through the root zone, which averages at the 5-foot depth across most of the Midwest, that top 5 feet of soil can hold 10 inches of plant available water. I already mentioned that it requires 20 inches to have an average crop if 10 of it's there when the season begins, and it looks like across just about all the way from mid-South Dakota all the way to Ohio, there's 10 inches of water in the top 5 feet of soil, meaning it will take another 10 of precipitation or irrigation at the right times to bring an average, or 15 inches to bring a full crop from the land.
Are there ways to predict the precipitation that far out, or how does that manage as time gets closer?
We just know that if we can anticipate with the type of general weather patterns that we have, whether it will be a near normal, a drier than and hotter than usual, or a wetter and cooler than usual year, which is why I was mentioning things like El Nino and La Nina. If an El Nino is around, we anticipate that the summer will not be oppressively hot and the precipitation will be near normal. If we have the La Nina dominating, the temperatures can become hot for a brief period of time, and often then the cold event would be even colder than usual. The wet events, wetter than usual. The dry events, drier than usual. In other words, La Nina brings extremes, and plants are adapted to averages more than they are to extremes, so the extreme year is a more risky year for the farmer. Will they get a full crop or will they not?
So help me make sure I understand this. This coming year, is that a riskier year? What do we think?
So I am trying to caution the farmers to use the best of risk management techniques, especially for production risk and marketing risk, that is handling your crop for the price, the risk of prices being high or being low, being volatile. Because we can anticipate if the La Nina that we will have more extreme conditions, that the volatility of the market, in other words, prices will go up and down like something like a yo-yo. Mm-hmm. And how does a farmer handle that as opposed to having a guaranteed price that this is what your crop will be worth? We anticipate that this year we may see what they would call scares in the market, running prices up, and then it turns out that that wasn't justified and prices go right back down. And farmers for the last few years now, last 3 or 4 years at least, have been really struggling with the low prices that they receive for the produce of their fields.
Are those low prices caused by the glut that you referred to earlier? Are there other reasons for scares in the market and low prices?
I think that it's pretty much been caused by the fact that we have so many acres dedicated to corn and to soybean, and the yield has been above the trend per acre. And with that going on, the amount is really just a world glut of these products compared to the demand that we have for them. They're a high demand product, and demand will increase with the low prices, and it will correct itself eventually. But in the meantime, the farmer still needs to be very careful of the risks that are brought by the weather.
You mentioned the best of risk management techniques. Is that something that farmers and producers really look at every year and just continue to work toward?
You know, we're in the age that the farmer suddenly realizes that they do need to manage risk, and what has been hard for the insurance companies and some other companies to understand is that if we're going to manage risk, we have to do it by the numbers. This is a scientific work. Risk has numbers, like you hear a 20% chance of rain. That's a number, or a 60% chance. Well, Those are the numbers that you can operate risk management from. Say, okay, there's this much chance that we'll get sufficient rain, this much chance that we won't. So how much grain should I sell right now on the chance we won't get the rain? And then if we do, maybe I will be glad I sold it. If we don't, maybe I'll wish that I'd held it back until the prices went up higher. Mm-hmm. Risk management tells me how much of that grain I should commit at this time.
So it's less intuition and more math.
I think that's exactly the word that we need.
All right. So when we talk about, you know, corn, soybeans, wheat, what's the role of sort of diversification in, you know, in one production from, you know, anything from adding a different crop to, you know, adding a different, you know, a hunting lot or, you know, something like that? How does that play into the overall picture of being a successful farmer in the state?
Well, it's everyone knows that it's good to be diversified if there's a diversified market. But when you're dealing with the five or six highest demand crops in the world, like rice, wheat, corn, soybean, tapioca, if I want to add one in there, that as late as 1960 was the number one food crop on the earth, and now it's still in the top six. With those, it's hard to be diverse into other things. There was a time when the Midwest produced a lot of vegetables, but the vegetables require a lot of processing, and the expense of processing plants and getting those ready for the market that only operated for the 2 months right at harvest time and sat empty for 10 months didn't work right. So pretty soon the vegetable production and fresh produce production moved to Florida, to Texas, to California, to Mexico, where they can produce a much longer season and justify the expense of handling the crop.
Elwin Taylor, any final thoughts for us as we have you in the studio? Final words of wisdom?
I'm going to mention a little bit about the climate we're expecting. Yeah. In the 40-year cycle that we mentioned right at the beginning, we're coming into the harsh part. People have said, well, you mean like the harshest weather for a century? I said, well, there is the harshest weather for a century. It was around 1936, the Dust Bowl of our past century. And there is such a thing as being careful of those things. And every 89 years, we have a Dust Bowl-like condition? Yes. When does that come next? 2025, if the weather keeps doing what it's done for the past 400 years.
All right, what does a Dust Bowl look like in 2025 versus what it looked like in 1936? Are we more prepared for it?
I hope that we're totally prepared for it, but we still have to realize that it takes management. It was the Dust Bowl that made the nation say we need to have crop insurance so that our number one industry of our nation, agriculture, number one industry in the world, doesn't end up collapsed with many years to recover because we have 1 or 2 years of very serious adverse weather effects on the crop. So we have federal help to keep this industry alive and well as long as the farmers will participate in these projects such as federal crop insurance.
So it's about the individual farmer, but also about public policy.
It is a very, very important process. I'm afraid not enough people realize or consider that our number one industry on this planet, the oldest industry, the largest industry, the most important industry of all of them is agriculture.
Elwin Taylor, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
I'm honored to be with you. I wish everyone a very good year.